5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Ladies and gentlemen of the AFN, this is the White House in Washington calling. I present the President of the United States.
I appreciate this opportunity to extend my greetings and best wishes to the Convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives. I want you to be among the first to know that I have just signed the Native Claim Settlement Act. This is a milestone in Alaska's history.
The corporate whale, ANCSA, the first 10 years.
The Reverend Merkuliev from St. George Island.
This land of Alaska, which thou gave to our ancestors who had come and gone before us, is now being handed to us a second time by the act of the United States Congress and our untiring efforts. A second chance is given to us by thee to be the new custodians and caretakers.
On December 16, 1981, several hundred Indian, Eskimo, and Aleut leaders gathered in a university cafeteria in Anchorage, Alaska, to consider the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act, ANCSA. For 3 days, they met and discussed the bill, a bill that offered compensation of nearly $500 million and close to one-ninth of the state's total land in exchange for relinquishing all further Aboriginal claims to that land. The dollar amount and the vastness of the territory impressed many. Some predicted that Alaska Natives would become the sheiks of the North, comparing the imminent financial windfall and potential gain from resource development with the Middle East. Others, especially residents of Alaska's oil-rich Arctic slope, felt the settlement was not a just exchange for claims to land that their ancestors occupied and used from, as they said, time immemorial. Now, 10 years after convention delegates agreed to the bill hammered out by Congress and its signing into law by President Richard Nixon on December 18, 1971, Alaska's natives have received the money, but are custodians and caretakers of less than one half of the expected lands. This 10-part series, The Corporate Whale, we'll listen to some of the events leading to the land claim settlement, the mechanisms that were employed to manage the act, government agencies and native corporations, hear how leaders assess the first 10 years, and predictions for 1991.
We're sailing towards the future, we're anchored in the past. Rich in our traditions, our way will surely last.
In 1971, the year ANCSA became law, Alaska was represented in Congress by the late Nick Begich in the House and Mike Revelle and Ted Stevens in the Senate.
I'm Ted Stevens, and I'm still a United States Senator. I think one of the key questions was the amount of land in the settlement. In the beginning, that had been listed at about 10, 11 million acres, and there were a series of Native leaders involved at that time who were insisting that there had to be 40 million acres at least. And members of the House and the Senate of both political parties kept saying, you know, here, you people must come up with a state recommendation on these various issues, and we're not going to decide whether the state of Alaska is right or the Native groups through the AFN or the members of Congress. You just cannot present this case to us for a settlement, a unique legislative settlement, without some unanimity. And we finally did get together and worked out a series of positions which reflected, a fairly unified approach, and that was when the bill finally moved.
Willie Hensley is now president of Nana Development Corporation, a Native corporation subsidiary, and chairman of a Native-owned bank, United Bank Alaska. He has been a state legislator and president of the Alaska Federation of Natives and has been very active lobbying Congress in Washington, D.C.
We had a, a lot of trouble with the ideas that were involved in the approaches that Congress was trying to impose, because frankly they wanted to make the settlement like a sieve. You know, that is, you pour all the land and money up here in this big funnel, and all of a sudden, swoosh, it's passed out throughout the society and basically again into non-native hands through business.
Business interests were in fact powerful influences in moving Congress and the executive branch toward a settlement. In 1968, ARCO announced that significant amounts of oil had been discovered on the North Slope, on lands traditionally used by the Inupiaq Eskimos. On December 17, 1971, Joe Upickson of Barrow, president of the Arctic Slope Native Association, addressed the delegates assembled in Anchorage.
The Congress is making this settlement for just one reason, because the oil of the North Slope is owned by the Inupiat Eskimos of the Arctic Slope. As it turns out, the pressure of the pipeline simply has required the Congress to move.
Don Wright, president of the Alaska Federation of Natives and lobbyist for the settlement, wanted to capitalize on that congressional movement. He knew the long history, the years of struggle to obtain that document. He knew that the Arctic Slope would not accept its conditions. And Congress and the president were waiting to hear from the delegates, many of them having their first close look at ANCSA's 29 crowded pages.
The Congress of the United States has acted on a piece of legislation that will make history not only for the state of Alaska, but for the United States and for the world. To the best of my knowledge, a land transaction such as this has never taken place anywhere in the world before. It's been the history of most nations to deal in total with other nations, each recognizing sovereignty that was gained by force of arms. The Congress of the United States at this time has truly recognized Aboriginal title that is vested in you people and left to you as an inheritance by your forefathers. Some of us individually may have thoughts about the fairness of this legislation. Some of us, no doubt, are not satisfied totally. The wording in this document is very complex and difficult. It says things that will be interpreted by lawyers in different ways. It was intended to be a total settlement.
Oh, right here. Wales?
Here.
Teller?
Here.
Breivik?
Here.
The room was divided into 13 areas, corresponding to the 12 regional corporations set out in the Act, plus the potential 13th regional corporation for Alaska Natives living outside of the state. The groups caucused, discussing pros and cons in the vote they would cast. Votes that could prompt a presidential veto and more years of claiming, not getting, title to land.
There are some things, you know, granted, that we don't like about it, that we would rather have both on the Senate and the House side, but the fact of the matter is that we have to live with this bill, personally. And I personally wouldn't want to take the chance of having the bill go through Congress again.
My recommendation would be, based on everything we have heard, that we go ahead and prepare to accept, and that we also, as a part of this recommendation, start to line out the improvements that we want to make in the bill. And obviously, the bill requires some clarifications, some improvements, and I'm the first to concede we're not perfectly happy with the bill.
I'm George Miller. I represent the Cook Inlet region, the biggest city Indian village in Alaska, Anchorage, Kenai, Tionic, Nanilchik, Iliamna, Seldovia, and the region of Cook Inlet recommends the signature of the President of the United States to sign the bill.
Are there any other regional chairmen that wish to comment?
My name is Cecil Barnes. I represent Region 11, the Chugach Native Association. And it is a recommendation of the delegation of the Chugach Native Association that the president sign the bill into law.
Are there any other regions that wish to speak? Tananoh chiefs?
The general feeling of region after region was that while the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act was an imperfect instrument, it could be worked with and fine-tuned later. Amidst all the positive sentiment, an elderly Tlingit man came to the podium, William Paul Sr., attorney and first Native member of the Territorial House of Representatives.
My theme right now is this. As I said long time ago, the land is ours. What are you afraid of? Now we've gone through a struggle, and it seems to be terminating at this time. And it seems to me that you are going to approve of this. But I want to tell you today that you ought not to be guided by your fear. The United States Congress admits that we have a legal right to the land. It is ours. In order to satisfy our legal rights, they are offering us the turkey buzzard.
How come you shut me up as if I wasn't there? What's this new bitterness you found? However wronged you were, however deep the hurt, it wasn't me that held you down.
Would the secretary please read the motion?
Motion made by Tim Wallace is to recommend that the president's signature be put on to the land claims bill. It was seconded by Harvey Samuelson.
The question was called last evening, and we're to take the vote at this time. So the secretary will call the roll. A yes vote will be approving for the President of the United States to sign the bill into law.
This will be a yes or no vote. Tlingit and Haida, A and B.
Central Council of Southeast Alaska votes yes.
Central Council, Southeast Alaska votes yes. 10 Chiefs, Fairbanks Native Association.
The Tananoh Chiefs, Fairbanks Native Association votes yes.
10 Chiefs, Fairbanks Native Association votes yes. Arctic Slope.
No.
Arctic Slope votes no. Kotzebue, NANA.
Yes.
Kotzebue, NANA votes yes. Tionic. Tionic votes yes. Washington chapter.
Washington chapter votes no, and our special thanks to the next president of the United States, Hope Jackson.
Washington chapter votes no. The total number of votes is 567. A total of 511 yes and 56 no.
With only the Arctic Slope and Washington regions dissenting, the delegates to the December 1971 Alaska Federation of Natives Convention overwhelmingly accepted Public Law 92-203. AFN President Don Wright.
We're starting on a new era, the post-settlement era.
You have been listening to the corporate whale, ANCSA, the first 10 years. The first program in a 10-part series written and produced by Karen Michelle McPherson with technical assistance from Phil Falkowski. Funding was provided by KUAC sponsors and the Alaska Native Human Resources Development Program of the Cooperative Extension Service of the University of Alaska. Special thanks to the historical tape collection of the University of Alaska Archives and musicians Herbie Vent, Buddy Tabor, and Fred Westerman. Cassette copies of this program are available for $5 from Educational Media Services, Star Route Box 20155, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701.
Ladies and gentlemen of the AFN, this is the White House in Washington calling. I present the President of the United States.
I appreciate this opportunity to extend my greetings and best wishes to the Convention of the Alaska Federation of Navies. I want you to be among the first to know that I have just signed the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act. This is a milestone in Alaska's history.
The corporate whale, ANCSA, the first 10 years.
The Reverend Merkulieff from St. George Island.
This land of Alaska, which thou gave to our ancestors who had come and gone before us, is now being handed to us a second time by the act of the United States Congress and our untiring efforts. A second chance is given to us by thee to be the new custodians and caretakers.
That second chance began on December 18, 1971, when President Richard Nixon signed into law the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act, ANCSA, a bill granting Alaska Natives $965.2 million and nearly 44 million acres of land in exchange for extinguishing Aboriginal claims to that land. An exchange that took years of difficult negotiations to get through Congress, and that is now taking years of difficult negotiations to implement. Imperfect as ANCSA may be, leaders involved in the fight for a settlement generally agree that given the times, the bill is as good a solution to the land claims problem as could be negotiated. In 1971, Morris Thompson, now a vice president of a Native regional corporation, Doyon Limited, served as area director for the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Alaska. Later, he moved to Washington, D.C., and became Commissioner of Indian Affairs between 1973 and 1976.
Since 1976 and into the 80s, we have seen for the first time Indian legislation brought to the floor of Congress and voted down overwhelmingly. And I think that will indicate that there has been a shift in the mood in Congress from one of doing justice, equity, and if you would, a conscious vote in some instances, to one of sharp questioning and closer examination of legislation affecting Indian people. I think had the Settlement Act come 8 to 10 years later, it would have, yes, definitely been much more restrictive.
Those restrictive provisions included in the Act, what the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act is and how it divides up the land and the money, will be discussed in this program, the second in a 10-part series, The Corporate Whale.
Dividing the mock talk, it's the way it's always been. Dividing the mock talk between family and friend. We're sailing towards a future, we're anchored in the past. Rich in our tradition, our way.
With the passage of the Land Claims Settlement Act, there were new ways and other traditions to learn to make the promise inherent in the paper translate into the entitlements it guaranteed. Already, Alaska Natives had been forced to make rapid changes as Russians, Americans, Canadians, and Europeans discovered and explored Alaska. And under ANCSA, more changes were required. In 1966, Willie Hensley, while a student at the University of Alaska, authored a paper entitled What Right to Land Have the Alaska Natives? Now, 10 years after those rights became law, Hensley is president of Nana Development Corporation, a Native corporation subsidiary, and chairman of the United Bank Alaska.
There's been a great deal of confusion in our people's minds as to what to do. The entire inner world, that is the linguistic world, the psychological world, the spiritual world, the legal world, you know, the economic world, the whole world of our peoples up here have, in a rather concentrated period of time, they've had to change.
changes that leaders were charged with explaining. Not an easy task with a densely packed piece of legislation in a language that is not always easy to interpret, especially to people living in villages that may not be connected by roads, with perhaps only one not always in service telephone for 200 or 300 people, and whose primary language may be Yupik or Inupiaq or Gwich'in, not English. John Sackett is a state senator and president of the board for one of the largest Native regional corporations, Doyon Limited.
There's a difficulty in explaining it to not only the shareholders, but to us as leaders. When you recognize that it's taken 10 years to get this far, the amount of time that it took to learn during the 10-year period is phenomenal for the leaders to understand all of the intricacies of the Act and of corporations in general. And it's not anything that anybody can understand immediately. You have to put it out and trying to explain it in common language.
Lee Gorsuch was given the task early on of explaining ANCSA. He came to Alaska in 1970 as an economic planner sponsored by the Ford Foundation. Today, he is executive director of the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research. In the interim, he authored a book distributed to all regional and village corporations, implementing the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act.
The land claims dealt with three major kinds of issues. The one was the amount of land that the Native people of Alaska were going to be granted as a part of the settlement. The second was the amount of money they would receive as essentially what was regarded to be remuneration or a cash settlement for the lands that were taken. And the third was the organizations that were going to be created through which the money would flow to individuals and organizations following, by and large, the ethnic lines of the cultural groups in Alaska. On the first issue, the Native corporations that were subsequently created were going to receive 40 million acres of land. Subsequently, under various options that the groups had that were on large reservations that had the choice of either taking land under the terms of the settlement or simply taking the reservation land, such as the Venati and Tetlin and so forth, the actual amount of land to be conveyed, I think, is now approximately 44 million acres rather than the 40 million acres. And that land estate was going to be divided up into different categories. Village corporations would get so much, regional corporations would get so much, and individuals would get essentially the land they occupied for their home sites or campsites or, in some cases, manufacturing sites. So the money was roughly divided among the corporations and those three different types of groups, regional, village, and individuals. There were also provisions for groups of individuals who weren't large enough to certify as a village. They received some land. There was also some additional land set aside for historical sites, cemeteries, and what have you. The money was essentially $962.5 million to be paid out over 11 years on a scheduled payment. And those payments basically have proceeded pretty much on course, with the exception that the state of Alaska accelerated its contributions, which amounted to $500 million, or essentially half of the cash settlement was to be paid by the state of Alaska. And the state of Alaska, the year before last, accelerated its contribution and essentially paid off its indebtedness to the Alaska Native corporations, so that as of today, all the money that was to be paid out to the Native corporations, the full $962.5 million, has been paid, and no more money will be received by the corporations as a result of the Claims Settlement Act's cash settlement. The third important element was the organization of how people were going to benefit from this land and money, and the Act essentially created regional corporations that were to be for-profit, and it authorized the creation of what became 13 corporations, 12 following the broad cultural groups within Alaska, with a provision a 13th regional corporation could be created for the benefit of Alaska Natives, irrespective of their cultural ties, that lived outside of the state of Alaska. The second class of corporations were to be village corporations, and essentially those places that had 25 or more Alaska Natives, the majority of all the residents of the community who happened to be Native, would be eligible to be certified by the Bureau of Indian Affairs as a Native village, and they were going to receive essentially cash and land as a part of their entitlements. Individuals who didn't belong to a particular village, but lived, say, for example, in Anchorage or Fairbanks, those individuals would receive their equivalent share of the cash that otherwise went to the village corporation directly as an individual. And the key to the whole thing in terms of creating these corporations was an enrollment process whereby everyone who was one quarter blood, Indian, Aleut, or Eskimo, or any combination, who had been living at the time in which the Settlement Act passed, was entitled to enroll or to go on the membership roll. And when you signed up on a membership roll, you indicated where your home was or where you regard your home to be, and that began to determine whether or not you were going to be a member of a village corporation and a regional corporation. And so the membership of the village and regional corporation became automatically determined on the basis of the enrollment. And that was essentially accomplished in about a 2-year period of time, after which the corporations were off and running.
Let my people dance. Let my people sing. Let my people dance. Let their voices ring.
Getting the corporations running wasn't so simple. The critical task of compiling the roll of Alaska Natives eligible under the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act, the corporate shareholders, fell to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. More than 76,000 Indians, Eskimos, and Aleuts enrolled, due in part to an aggressive ad campaign. Former BIA Commissioner Morris Thompson.
We had the public service announcements at halftime of the football games, at the Super Bowl. We had Cher Bono and then the late Chief Dan George make spots for us that appeared in print, in newspapers. We held press conferences up and down the West Coast, took Alaskan personalities up and down the West Coast to be on talk shows, to give interviews, to appear at Indian centers, and use some rather innovative methods of seeking out Alaska Natives.
Native, that is, as defined by the Act, a definition that excludes those born after December 18, 1971, the date ANCSA was signed into law. Lee Gorsuch.
There were clearly individuals who felt that somehow by having established a single date, that essentially all children who would be born after that date of Native ancestry or Native blood would not be a member, per se, of the corporations unless they inherited stock and became, through inheritance, members of the corporations. And I think there are many people who felt that was a potential weakness. It just became an administrative convenience for deciding how to carve up the money, how to decide the amount of land to allocate, and that it built in certainty to what otherwise could have been a very uncertain and sticky situation.
The Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act consistently finds its own way to avoid sticky situations and distribute benefits, rather than mimicking other Indian legislation. Partly for that reason, ANCSA has often been called a social experiment. Willie Hensley.
But who in the hell wants to experiment with the survival of a people? You know, it might be an experiment for the congressional staffers and congressmen and bureaucrats, but you know, the way I look at it, it's it was either lose it all, that is, lose complete control of our space, or do the best you can, you know, in a situation in which you did not control the eventual outcome. And when I look around the world and see what people have to do to survive, I think, God, it's tough up here, but geez, we got so much more than other people do. And I think we have to recognize that and build on it.
You've been listening to The Corporate Whale, ANCSA, the first 10 years, the second program in a 10-part series written and produced by Karen Michelle McPherson, with technical assistance from Phil Falkowski. Funding was provided by KUAC sponsors and the Alaska Native Human Resources Development Program of the Cooperative Extension Service of the University of Alaska. Special thanks to the historical tape collection of the University of Alaska Archives and musicians Herbie Vent, Buddy Tabor, and XIT. Cassette copies of this program are available for $5 from Educational Media Services, Star Route Box 20155, Fairbanks, Alaska 99701.
Ladies and gentlemen of the AFN, this is the White House in Washington calling. I present the President of the United States.
I appreciate this opportunity to extend my greetings and best wishes to the Convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives. I want you to be among the first to know that I have just signed the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act. This is a milestone in Alaska's history.
The corporate whale, ANCSA, the first 10 years.
The Reverend Merkulia from St. George Island.
This land of Alaska, which thou gave to our ancestors, who had come and gone before us, is now being handed to us a second time by the act of the United States Congress and our untiring efforts. A second chance is given to us by thee to be the new custodians and caretakers.
Traditionally, Alaska's native peoples, Indians, Eskimos, and Aleuts, were custodians and caretakers of the land they and their ancestors occupied and used, going where the fish and game were plentiful and survival needs could be met. Formal title to land, pieces of paper indicating ownership, was not necessary. There were no institutions to manage and develop the resources of the land, no corporations documented by the Securities and Exchange Commission. But with the passage of the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act, ANCSA, on December 18, 1971, those traditional, internally recognized and validated means of custodianship were congressionally replaced with the American business corporate structure. Under the terms of the Land Claims Settlement Act, the $962.5 million and 44 million acres of land offered in exchange for relinquishing Aboriginal claims were to be distributed and managed by profit-making entities, corporations. 12 corporations in-state, largely created along ethnic divisions, plus the option of a 13th corporation for Alaska Natives living outside of state, and village corporations as well, over 200 of them, though villages could decide whether to pursue profit or nonprofit status. At the time the act passed, shortly before Christmas 1971, there were jokes, as there still are, about the Brooks Brothers native, the three-piece Eskimo. But the corporations created under the act differ significantly from Exxon and IBM and others, and that every shareholder, every person who was one-fourth or more Indian, Eskimo, or Aleut, born before the act was signed into law and enrolled, automatically received 100 shares of stock in both their regional and village corporations if they were enrolled to a village. It was a democratic way of entering into the corporate mainstream, and in that sense of equality for all shareholders, the corporation had precedence in traditional Native society, where, for example, a whale would be shared with all members of the community. In this program, the third in a 10-part series, The Corporate Whale, Native leaders and others involved with the framing of the land claim settlement give some of their thoughts on the corporate concept and how well that mechanism works for dividing the benefits of ANCSA, the whale.
Dividing the mock talk, it's the way it's always been. Dividing the mock talk between family and friends. We're sailing towards the future, we're anchored in the past. Rich in our tradition, our way will surely last.
In 1966, while president of the Cook Inlet Native Association, Emil Noddy became the first president of the Alaska Federation of Natives. He made frequent trips to Washington, D.C. to work on land claims legislation, including the concept of village and regional corporations.
But I think Congress's reason for doing that was a failure, I think, of the reservation system. The fact that termination had been tried and was not working. And so they were looking for a new way to solve the, quote, Indian problem. And the experiment here is to get people involved in the economic system. You know, what better way than to get people involved all the way through, from the villages to the regions, and you're involved with the SEC and attorneys and accountants, and every year they're all required to file taxes and become concerned about stock ownership, not only in the village but in the region, and the value of the stock and the budgets. And it's a great method, I think, to get people into the mainstream. And I think that's Congress's intent.
Economist Lee Gorsuch, now executive director of the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research, would agree with Noddy.
It certainly took the form of the normal corporation with the capital as the mechanism by which these resources would be distributed as benefits to the individuals. So I think the answer is yes, essentially. The form of the Native Claim Settlement Act is consistent with all the corporate laws and the capitalistic system that's present in the United States. And I recall when Congressman Aspinall, who was a very powerful figure in the House of Representatives, had said that he wasn't about to attempt to rewrite all the corporate laws in the United States for the benefit of the Alaska Native population. And if they wanted the money and the land, they'd have to receive it through the existing laws that have been set up for corporations. And that's essentially how it took place. I don't recall any serious discussions about alternatives to that, such as using the traditional councils or the IRAs or anything of that sort. And there also seemed to be a general attitude among the leadership that what they were really asking for was an opportunity to become a participant in the mainstream. And clearly the corporations in the corporate form were the best understood by all the advisors and consultants who were working with the Native Corporation. So I think familiarity and experience was one of the strong factors that led to the acceptance of the corporate form as the means by which the land and money would be received and managed.
State Senator John Sackett, chairman of the board for Doyon Limited, the Native regional corporation created by the Act for the Interior Athabascan Indians, guided his corporation into that mainstream.
I favored the settlement that we have now, which is unique in the sense that it's not the traditional method of either creating reservations or having a cash settlement that would be distributed to everyone all at one time.
Sackett served as chairman and president of the board of Doyon Limited for that corporation's first 4.5 years. It was his responsibility to transform the Tanana Chiefs Conference into the state's potentially largest private landowner.
The challenge of having a large corporation created overnight versus, say, myself as an individual starting from a small business and then through a number of years trying to develop into a larger corporation. We didn't have that choice. We were stuck with a large corporation and had to think as a large corporation. I suppose that was the greatest challenge to me. The first couple of years, I think it was a great learning process for everybody, not only for myself, but for all the different regions and all the different corporations. And then you had all the different village corporations learning too. I think that was challenging, trying to learn and not make major substantive mistakes at the same time.
Inevitably, mistakes, large financial ones, have been made. Within the past 10 years, ANCSA's first decade, there have been corporations verging on dissolution and others doing very well. Some have opulent offices in buildings owned by the corporation and distribute flashy annual reports touting their achievements, while others apologize to shareholders for their losses and promise better years ahead. Roger Lang, a past president of AFN, is on the board of directors of Sea Alaska Regional Corporation, the first Native corporation to make the Fortune 1000, and is president of the Alaska Native Foundation, which provides technical assistance for villages.
You've got to realize what we've gone through, see? The first 3 years that we were in existence, we had to do enrollment, and the corporations did enrollment. I mean, they had to do village selections, and there was 18 months to do that, and you had to do regional selections, there was a year to do that. And none of that crap is what normal corporations have to do. But that's 3 years out of your corporate life. And the need for leadership at that time was a little different than it was now. As a result was that most corporations at the regional level, anyhow, became kind of conservative in the use of their money, and they didn't do much in the business world or business ventures. But once all of that necessary crap was over, then we could get down to being corporations. And I would imagine that out of the 10 years that have passed, that somewhere between 4.5 and 5 years have been completely devoted to being corporations. And even of those 4.5 or 5 years, the other factors, the social needs of the people that you represent, are there, and you can't ever erase those from your considerations.
Lang is not alone in his thinking. For the past few years, a number of Native leaders have been discussing other ways of looking at the corporation, not just as an entity for generating capital, but for retaining cultural identity as well.
But there are drums beyond the mountain, Indian drums that you can't hear. There are drums beyond the mountain, and they're getting mighty near.
Willie Hensley, founder of the Northwest Alaska Native Association, former state legislator, past president of the AFN, current chairman of United Bank Alaska, and president of NANA Development Corporation, in a keynote speech to the 1980 convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives.
The land which represents our spiritual homeland now rests in a corporation, a soulless entity that is designed for commercial purposes. As you know, this was not a usual settlement. Among the Indians, they had a tribe, a tribal government, that was responsible for the survival of the people, of their language, and of their culture, and only incidentally were involved in business. Unfortunately, our identity as a people, our tribal soul, has an uneasy resting place if we think that our corporations exist just for corporate purposes, then we have a problem.
Charlie Edwardson Jr. of Barrow, Etok, an early leader in the statewide land claims movement, describes Native corporations this way.
Nobody else can have any more than what each and every one of us have. And this criteria alone is a very revolutionary technique for the extended life of the Alaska Native people. And no place else in the world has a design built in with a birthright to capital ever been developed in the world at this time. And so it is wrong in the context to evaluate these corporations, which are 12 regional corporations, from the archaic old American model.
Willie Hensley.
If we play the game that Congress intended to, then we're going to lose it. All I'm saying is that, sure, you know, we understand what's going on. I mean, we understand, you know, what a corporation is, you know, and what it does, but let's not get engulfed by it, right? I'm saying that with other institutions as well, you see? And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that, see, the solution that I see is right for everybody. In fact, the intriguing thing about the settlement is that, you know, you can approach it the way you want, and still be right. It depends on what your people want.
You've been listening to The Corporate Whale, ANCSA, the First 10 Years, the third program in a 10-part series written and produced by Karen Michelle McPherson with technical assistance from Phil Falkowski. Funding was provided by KUAC sponsors and the Alaska Native Human Resources Development Program of the Cooperative Extension Service of the University of Alaska. Special thanks to the Historical Tape Collection of the University of Alaska Archives, KUAC-FM, and musicians Herbie Vent, Buddy Tabor, the Tunic Dance Group of Barrow, and Peter Lafarge. Cassette copies of this program are available for $5 from Educational Media Services, Starroot Box 20155, Fairbanks, Alaska 99701.